So this plastic seat was removed and the rail seat is bolted in its place. That means the spectator has a railing in front of them and has a railing behind them. So during Scottish domestic matches, they're standing in that space safely. When it's European match night, the ground staff come along, they've got a key, they insert it, and that enables them to lower the seat, and hey presto, paradise becomes an all-seated stadium.
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFerlin.
Hello.
Welcome back, Jan.
Thank you.
There were issues.
There were things
transpiring last week.
Last week was
a crazy week, though, wasn't it, really? So it wasn't any surprise that things went wrong.
It was probably some Russian hacker.
Oh, probably.
Am I allowed to say that? It's probably not good I can say that now. I shouldn't be saying that.
Anyway, we're all here now, and we're going to be discussing this week's hard-hitting topic of the week, because that's what people want to hear about, isn't it? Hard-hitting topics.
I think so.
Yeah, of course it is. The papers are full of hard-hitting topics, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's the wrong hard-hitting topics the papers are full of, though.
Yeah. But hopefully we'll have something that's less divisive. Or maybe it is. I don't know. We're going to be talking about safe standing this week. Because other people are talking about safe standing.
They are.
Importantly, the Premier League this week will be getting together, sitting around a table, or maybe standing around a table.
I hope they do.
Yeah. And we say, guys, let's stand up for this conversation. Do we feel like this conversation's going better because we're standing up?
Yeah. Do you think that they have stewards come along encouraging them to please sit down?
Yeah. And ineffectively.
Then they all sing, stand up if you hit La Liga.
Stand up if you hate poor division. Oh, dear.
Just imagine how that meeting goes as well, when they all say, oh, I'm sure about time for a drink, chaps, don't you think? sorry, rules say no drinks either.
Yes.
No standing, no drinks.
No drinking within sight of the table.
Yeah, we do have some funny laws, don't we, over here?
We do.
Yeah. So it would be nice if we could actually get around to repealing them. Because a lot of them were actually put in for the wrong reasons, weren't they?
Yeah, the Taylor Report came up with some conclusions about the Hillsborough disaster, which, as we now know, turned out to be incorrect. And one of the biggest bone of contentions for standing or terraces and their abolition was that they were deemed to have made a contribution to, been a factor rather, to the Hillsborough disaster. Now, we now understand, and some people have understood all along, but we now have it conclusively proven that in fact it was negligence, criminal negligence on behalf of the police that caused the Hillsborough disaster and not standing. Mm. And so, question is then begged, is it right or is it appropriate to start bringing back safe standing or standing? And of course, safe standing is something that is a regular thing now in Europe, on the continent, on the mainland. And why, in that case, should it not come back here?
Now, we've been to Germany a few times, Scottish football.
Yes.
But I've never been knowingly in a safe standing area. I've stood at a football match, but that was a second tier match.
Yeah, we went to Aachen, didn't
yes.
we? Yeah, which has just got bog standard old fashioned terracing, which did have it.
Which was fun to be on.
Which is fun, yeah.
Yeah, apart from those massive loud hailers they had there. Those massive tannoys there.
There was that gap in the terrace. Everywhere else was really busy.
Yeah.
And then there was that little hole on the terrace. And there was about five of us, and it looked like it could fit five guys. And we went, look, there we go. And then they all stood there, and then suddenly we thought, oh, the reason why no one's standing here is because there's a dirty great PA speaker standing right in the line of sight. So anyway, we felt foolish. And all these sort of Aachen fans are sort of looking at the stupid Englanders, sort of like, you know, and their lack of knowledge of the local terrain. And we had to crane our neck while watching the match. But we didn't mind.
We didn't.
It was all in good fun.
It was all in good
fun.
There
was plenty of beer there.
Yeah, but I suppose the good thing about safe standing is that it's in modern grounds, and hopefully we'll have access to modern safety features as well, so irrespective of what system to, because there's not just one system, is there? Yeah, there's more than one system of safe standing. The one that is being talked about over here is the rail system.
Indeed.
Which is a very simple system which has a little tip-up seat that is locked in place when it's a terrace. I've sat in a rail seat when I was at a Supporters Direct function and there was a display of said rail seating. I wasn't too comfortable. It's not the most comfortable seats you've ever been in, considering that modern seats in modern stadiums now are quite plush.
Mm.
And the tip-up seats are pretty much a step backwards as far as that goes. That's not such a bad thing. I mean, I don't need my arse costed that much when I'm watching
speak
a football
for yourself.
Match. Well, yes, we all know about the problems you have with your...
Yes, indeed. Yeah,
less wow. said about that. Less the said about
yeah.
that.
But I think if you take your inflatable ring along to a football match, I don't think you'd have any problem at all.
But all the other fans would laugh at me if I brought my inflatable ring.
But I didn't get on too well with the bar in front of me. But apparently I'm told that they are various heights and they would probably be at a more suitable height.
Yeah, so fitted so that they weren't interfering with anyone's eyes.
And that's you sitting down, though.
Yeah, that's who's sitting
down.
So
this is a compromise, obviously, between, you know, a good old-fashioned place to park your arse and, you know, obviously they can lock it away and you can stand up.
Yeah, but I think what it is the fact that obviously we're in the German grounds where they have rail seating, they're allowed to have them locked up so people are standing there when they're playing a league game. But, of course, when the Champions League's in town, it's got to be all seater then.
Right.
So that's why they have that.
Yeah, because UEFA, of course, insist on all-seater stadia. Yes. I don't know why they do that, but they do.
Mm.
Maybe they just do. Maybe they do because it's to accommodate English law, because of English clubs participating, and so they feel that they have to in order to accommodate English law.
That'll look I don't know. Window soon,
that doesn't seem to, I've just said that out loud, and that doesn't make any sense.
It could
sense.
Be. It is, that's that's very possible.
I don't know. Anyway, they do. And UEFA insist upon it. And so, yes, so if you've got rail, so your alternatives are you've got the rail seats, in which case, for the most part, they're up, as Graham says.
Yeah.
And then if you're good enough to be playing in European competition, you know, they have to get the guys around with the little Allen keys and donk, donk. So you get a lot of donk sounds going on, sort of like on Monday nights and Friday nights as they go down and up.
I'm assuming this isn't like prohibitively labour intensive to do this.
Because, I imagine it probably is, but I mean more so than anything else.
Because the systems they've got in Munich, they've actually got removable seats, which sounds like a really big effort to actually do that and replace them with standard terracing rather than these rail seat systems. But I suppose at the moment for cost-effective, time-effectiveness, the rail seat system seems to be the most popular and it seems to be the one that's winning out. Jan, you've been reading up about Celtic's implementation, haven't you?
Yeah, they put in just under 3,000 and they opened that in July. And I was scouring the Google. You might have heard of that, Terry.
Yeah.
The Google. I couldn't see any, and I may be completely wrong, I might have been looking in the wrong Google, but certainly there was no reference to any problems, issues, dramas to do with the fact that that they had the jungle had reopened. So it seems like it's doing all right there.
Yeah, well, it's a very small section, isn't it?
3,000.
Yeah, I mean, that's less than 5% of the actual capacity of the ground. But obviously, it's a step in the direction that they want to go in.
Mm-hmm.
They've obviously listened to fans for a change, for a football club to do that, amazingly enough. And they've opened up this section for people who want to stand to stand in.
Yeah. Do we know anything about the price of these tickets? Are they markedly cheaper than normal?
You know? I don't know. I don't know. I would imagine they are.
One of the benefits traditionally of terracing is that they're cheaper than seating. One of the arguments when terracing was banned was that, in fact, it was a rather cynical method of gentrifying the game by bringing in higher ticket prices and pricing out the traditional working class support. I don't know whether or not there's anything in that, whether or not it was a deliberate thing or whether or not it was a sincere desire to make football stadiums safer. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious as to whether or not the... anyway, we don't know, so we don't know.
Yeah. I don't think that... I think any club's going to try and maximise its income out of whatever laws are imposed on it. But I think that it would be silly for any club not to want to push for this. Certainly on the Football Supports Federation, it's got a lovely section on this and a nice interview with the head of safety at Hanover as well, where they said that they could take the capacity from this particular section from 3,000 seated to 5,700 standing.
Mm.
So that's a significant number of people
almost
in
double,
there.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're all obviously paying for their tickets, buying their pie or whatever they eat there, and their beer and things like that, and all the other the stuff that goes around the ground. So, you know, that's a big income stream for them. So I can't imagine a club would not be pro safe standing.
Well, interestingly, I read a BBC article in my very brief research for this, unfortunately, and apparently it's thought that a number of Premier League clubs will not be entirely happy with this.
Really?
Also, I read in, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was one of the more popular Liverpool blogs, that the Hillsborough families are opposed to terracing and standing. Now, obviously, their view on this is going to be very, very different. Their perspective is going to be very different to a lot of people. But I felt that was quite interesting, that there does still seem to be some quite strong opinion that this is not the best way to go. What I have trouble with is reconciling that view with the evidence on the mainland. Why, you know, years have gone by and there hasn't been any kind of significant accident of this nature with standing or safe standing or terracing in countries that I'm certainly aware of in Europe under this system, and I'm wondering why people would feel therefore that if it was reintroduced or introduced in England that there would be that danger. I suppose, given the somewhat unique trauma that we all experienced after Hillsborough, all football fans experienced after Hillsborough, some far more than others, but in our own way we all felt it, that it is a raw subject and that perhaps these emotions need to be considered before making what appears to be quite a reasonable decision.
Is this, I mean, the immediate aftermath of Hillsborough laid the blame squarely at the fans.
Yes.
And of course it fitted in very well with the narrative of the time, which was in many respects largely deserved, with the amount of crowd trouble there was on terraces.
Yeah,
I say largely, it wasn't fully deserved, but you know, not everyone involved, not everyone who went to a football match or stood up at a football match was involved in trouble, but there were sections of people that did enjoy having a bit of a dust up at a football match. There still are.
Yes.
And making them sit down doesn't seem to have taken that away in certain sections. And we spoke about West Ham a few weeks ago, didn't we, where the trouble was happening there. And a lot of people say, well, look, it keeps people more under control, or it's easier to control people when they're sat down than it is when they're stood up. And I suppose with things like pyrotechnics now, we see that on the mainland, don't we? We see a lot of that over there. Maybe that's something that their fan culture is more attuned with, and our ones, you do see the occasional flare being let off, but it's not that often, and maybe because it's harder in a stand to get away with that, because you get picked out immediately, don't you, if you've got one.
I think where our security is hotter over here because of our legacy of football violence.
Yeah.
On the mainland, pyrotechnics are very much part of the culture, but they are also increasingly more discouraged by the football authorities. There's been some quite heated disputes between fan groups and the DFB in Germany about the use of pyrotechnics. And every time there's an accident or somebody gets carried away with a pyro and someone almost gets hit with one, or one ends up in the wrong part of the ground, then you know it's jumped on by the DFB, and I'm bound to say to a degree by some of the more sensationalist German media, as being symptomatic of a broader problem, and then fan groups will then protest and say, look, this happens all the time. There's pyros go on all the time, and very rarely do anything like this happen, and it's part of our thing and you shouldn't take it away. So I think if anything, that I'm not certain whether the trend of pyro over here is going to really catch on. We're all too across our firework code.
Well, that's the thing. I was just thinking, in Germany, they don't have Guy Fawkes Night, so therefore they didn't have an entire decade full of public information films.
They don't. No.
So therefore,
they
your your average average football fan here, he's not going to pick up a sparkler, is he?
Yeah.
It's not going
to
happen.
We all know that you have to hold your sparkler at arm. It's all been drained. It's all been ingrained into us from a very early age. And maybe that's the thing. That was the thing that John Hartley said on this podcast. He was talking about this experience of carnival in Cologne, his first experience, and they were all mad, and they were all just like shooting Roman candles at each other and lusting fireworks around grown adults, you know. I mean, and
just shivered on my spine.
Just thinking, what are you doing? You know, I mean, it's funny, but I mean, at the same time, goodness knows what. The
Where's your biscuit tin? Oh God!
That doesn't happen over here.
No,
my uncle Frank and his next door neighbour's pampas grasses will.
Next door neighbour's pampas grasses.
My uncle Frank, a Roman candle, and next door's pampas grass.
There's a joke in that.
and lots of saucepans full of water.
Oh dear!
Yeah.
Oh dear.
That's the suburbs for you.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's the '70s for you.
But you don't even have to go as far as the mainland to find evidence of a very safe standing. In rugby, for example, they've never had this imposed upon them. I was at Leicester versus Northampton the season before last. Actually, didn't even think about how they would deal with spectators and things like that. I just turned up and we were standing and we had a beer, and this wasn't even with safe standing. This was just terracing with a few crush baths.
And could you drink?
You could drink. Well, this is an interesting thing, actually.
Rugby's not for the likes of us, though, is it, Terry?
No.
It's all right for old Mr. Posh over. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, though, the
Kane.
What is called the Green Guide, which is published by the Department of Culture and Media and Sport, which I would imagine that covers all three of those, covers us, I would imagine, apart from maybe the culture. but it specifically singles out football out of all spectator sports that the paper covers. For alcohol, that section is only about association football and the top levels, which is crazy, absolutely crazy.
Yeah, well, we see the craziness of it in the fact that when we go to watch non-league, we can, as long as we have a plastic glass, we can go and drink inside of the pitch.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Except on FA Cup days.
Which is just...
Which we get the same number of people there, the same type of people turning up.
If anything, slightly more, because the FA Cup at non-league level is a big draw, and so you actually get more. So there's... I mean,
Not significantly more.
Only slightly more.
But, obviously different competition, different rules, and all of a sudden we can't be trusted to have a drink within sight of the pitch.
Yeah, but people don't kick off in other sports, they don't kick off in other countries in the same sport, regardless of whether they are drinking, sitting down, standing up. Some stats taken from, I think it was 2008-2009 season, when they compared the clubs outside of the Championship and those that did have all-seater and those that didn't, and they actually found that those that did have all-seater actually had more arrests than those that had some standing, which actually just throws the whole thing the whole thing out. I think I read that on the Football Supporters Federation as well, and there's so much evidence to suggest that this is not what it was made up to be, and that this has all come about because, as Terry said, there was a cover up.
Yeah,
and it's affected 20 years of the game.
That's right. Yeah,
but I think I come back to a point that Terry made earlier, was the fact that if the clubs really wanted it, it would happen. I'm pretty sure, isn't it, really?
I think so, yeah. And I think that if they get a consensus with this meeting, which apparently is not entirely likely, but if they do, then I think that there is a good chance that they would then go to the government and lobby the government to say, you know, we think we're ready to do this, we want to do this, and we need the legislation or the relevant act to be repealed a new act to be.
Yeah, repealed. I mean, it's. I know a couple of the managers have come out of it, have come out and said they support it, but unless the owners themselves support back him in that, then it doesn't really matter. I think there's only a couple of clubs that have actually publicly said anything positive.
There's a whole list of them on the
these are top flight ones.
Well, there's two top flight ones that I know of, one of which is my own club, Sunderland, who said it a few years ago. They weren't the first, I have to point out, but it was a few years ago. And what I read today is that West Brom are sending their operations director up to Celtic to actually on a fact-finding mission to see what they can do. Now, those clubs, well, Sunderland certainly at the bottom end of the table, but certainly in the rich list.
Yeah.
I'd say those two clubs belong somewhere towards the bottom anyway. But I was just wondering whether there is a reason why clubs like Sunderland and West Brom would think that was a good idea, and that clubs, and I'm not sure if clubs like Manchester United or Chelsea or Arsenal would think it was a bad idea. But that's when you said that there were some clubs that potentially didn't really think this was a good idea, then I immediately thought of the higher end clubs.
Yeah.
So that's a very long question. But do we think that there's the reason why the Champions League clubs, if you like, wouldn't want to do it?
Well, the only thing I can think of is the fact that they'd be the ones converting their ground every other week. Getting in like to setting that up from one to the other. That's the only reason I can think of it being it. Or else they'd have to get in different types of stewarding arrangements there. But I suppose if you go to other grounds and see what's going on there, then you perhaps be able to see that. They need, I know any Premier League decision needs, 14 out of the 20 to agree to it. So I think it's very difficult to get. So you don't need a full consensus, but you need to be pretty much all the way there, don't you?
And given how emotional this subject is, I wouldn't be at all surprised if they actually said, we're not going to go ahead with this unless we've got a unanimous decision, unless all clubs agree to it. Because I don't think that this is the kind of thing that you can drag people along reluctantly to. I think everyone really has to want to do this. And if there's maybe one or two that don't, then I suppose that might be all right. But, I mean... Really, I mean, I think that I suspect that they would be less comfortable taking it to the government.
Yeah.
If you're going to ask Parliament to put a new act, to put a new bill into the Commons on something like this, then really you do, I think, need to be able to convince them that it's universally desired. Yeah. And there are some...
See Terry, you're just giving in to those... Brussels bureaucrats again, aren't you? Unfortunately, who imposed all this standing?
Exactly. Unfortunately,
coming over here, making us stand.
Unfortunately, over here, our parliament is sovereign, and it's they who would have to make the decision to whether to do this. And they would be less inclined to do it if they felt that there were significant constituents within the industry who were opposed to it.
Yeah.
And so therefore I think it's a long way off under that,
I think,
in
so.
That respect.
And they've said as well, the government has said that they've got no plans to change it. They think on the whole it's very safe.
And also,
we're busy with a load of other shit at the moment.
Yeah, they have also suddenly got an awful lot on their plate. And when would there be parliamentary time to properly debate this issue? And is it worth it? It's football.
Yeah.
After all.
Yeah.
Is it really worth it? Now, a law saying that we could drink beer at grounds, that I think is something that people could get for behind. But I do, because apart from anything else, I think that there would be beer brands would probably feel that they're somewhat hampered in their sponsorship opportunities.
Yeah.
And commercial partnership opportunities with big football clubs because of the ban.
Yeah.
And I think that there are quite powerful interests. And I think you'd be less inclined to find resistance to that. But standing it will remain a very emotional issue for a very long time, irrespective of the data and irrespective of whatever, you know, the findings were post-Hillsborough all these years. I think that it's... And again, there will be a feeling they will say, well, look, you know, everything's fine with all-seaters, so why are we changing it back? Why do we need to? Do we have to go to all this hassle? Why? Mm. And I've got a bit of time for that. I am personally in favour of it, but at the same time, I do recognise that people feel strongly against it, and I think that it behooves us all to have a firm consensus before we move forward with this.
I think that the a lot of clubs would be scared of something happening within their grounds, something terrible happening, something, you know, like a mass casualty. But the reality is that, you know, going back to, without dissecting Hillsborough, but going back to that time. So I watched, I went to probably all, nearly all of the football matches I've been to was around that time. You know, grounds were disgusting. They were terrible. They were Victorian grounds. You were treated like scum. And I'm sorry to say, when you put people in an environment which is horrible, nasty concrete steel, and you've got policemen chasing you around the place and stewards treating you like a criminal, people will misbehave. Yeah. If you put people in environments which are lovely and nice, and let them treat them like adults, then they tend to behave a little bit better, and which means that you can let them have a drink if you want to, if they want to, because the reality is they're probably going to behave themselves if they're not being treated like criminals and they're not being herded in. So if they've got enough personal space, if they've got space to hang around outside of the ground and inside of the ground and actually on the terraces, seats, whatever they want to do. I think we just don't trust football fans, and that's the problem when they all come together. But we trust everybody else in a crowd, and it's we're talking about how you deal with crowds, and that's what it should be. It shouldn't be what they're watching.
There's a whole new approach to crowd control now, and in trying to de-escalate situations, a lot of the police now are looking at this attempt to de-escalate things. So going into crowds where there's anger and where there's confrontation, and taking them aside and talking to them about what it is that made them angry, and literally just talking them down so that everyone then calms their shit and then walks away, and then no one gets arrested, no one has to spend the night in a cell, and it just cuts down on almost everything. And this is proving to be quite a successful approach, and I imagine that we'll see a lot more of that.
Can we see some of that on Twitter?
Yeah, we could conceivably, but you need to find volunteers to do the de-escalating. I'm certainly not one of them. In the 70s and the 1980s, English football culture, fan culture, was hijacked, in my opinion, to a very large degree by violent people with a different non-football agenda. Yes. Some of it was just political, and some of it was just simply the desire to do violence. And it generated a situation of distrust and antipathy between the authorities and football fans, which ended up permeating through the entire football fan culture, to the extent where if you said you were a football fan, you were regarded by ordinary members of the public with suspicion. You were potentially a hooligan, and that's how bad it got. The reality is that football fans are people like rugby fans are people, and they are just as capable or as incapable of doing violence depending on their environment.
Cool.
So for the most part, because rugby wasn't infiltrated by these wrong'uns, they were able to go through as they did. But football fans have had their experience massively informed and swayed by this what I would regard as a social problem to begin with was outside of football. And I think that's part of the great tragedy of all of this is that ultimately it led to the most horrific disaster and a cover-up for so long, because it was just expedient to blame football fans, because as Graham said earlier, I'm sure not literally, but it was a deserved reputation, but obviously it was deserved because of this outside element.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that it was deserved, because I don't think all football fans are violent.
No.
And football did push back, because there's a famous quote or a conversation between Thatcher and I forget whoever was the head of the...
It was the guy who never got his knighthood, wasn't it?
Because she said, you need to sort out your hooligans, and he said, no, you need to sort out your society.
Yeah.
And she didn't like that. And obviously, that's why he didn't get his knighthood.
She said, I'm fed up of your football hooligans, and he says something like, no, madam, I'm fed up of your hooligans interfering with our sport.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, because the obvious thing here is that football gets, to a very large degree, most of its core support from the working class. And rugby, for example, gets its core support from the middle class.
Mm.
And for years, this divide, this prejudice against working class people has pervaded. In all manner of different realms, but particularly in football. And football's a working class sport, and football supporters are violent, therefore working class people are violent and uneducated and unsavable in that respect. And it's and it's a, it's a, it's and I apologies, but
no, I no, no, you're absolutely right.
Among rugby fans, I found that this is still a view that some rugby fans that I've encountered still feel about football fans, and it's still very much for me goes back to that, and we would all, I think, be a lot better off if we could overcome that, and I think perhaps trying to normalise things in the football stadiums might actually be beneficial in a broader sense.
Mm, agreed. You look what was happening around those times, though, in the 70s and 80s, to working class people. You know, their societies were being dismantled because of free market economics. And again, going back to the environment thing I was talking about earlier, people find themselves in an environment where the officials, if you like, in society are against you, and it causes problems. It causes a backlash.
Still happening now.
Yeah. Well, we've seen what happens with backlashes, haven't we? But there you go.
Well, yeah, I think we've actually talked quite a lot about this, haven't we? We haven't really come up with any solution, do we? Really?
Was there a plan to come up with a solution?
I don't think there was. No, I think what we've shown up is the fact that they'll be talking about this for a long time at that meeting. Ah, right. Yeah. Other things going on tonight before we go. Germany, Italy are playing a friendly tonight, and they're using video refs in it.
Boo.
Yeah. Boo. Boo. Boo.
The beginning of the end, guys. Yeah,
beginning of the end.
End of days.
Yeah, you see, they get that in there, don't they? Manage to sneak that in there, don't they?
Every generation says that they preside over the end of days, and they're usually wrong. But yeah. I think actually, in our case, we're right.
Oh God, yeah, we are actually right, aren't we? Anyway, we've got some good news, haven't we?
We've got some great news.
Yeah, because we're actually doing a new thing, and we want you, the listeners, to consume it.
So every week, we will be doing a newsletter previewing 7 of the best football matches that are going to be on the television. It'll come out on Thursday-ish, possibly Friday morning, depending on who it is who's doing it.
Yeah, so if you're doing it, it's going to come out on Friday morning.
If you're wondering, it's going to be on Friday morning. If you're doing it, possibly a little bit earlier. It's going to be, so it's 7 games usually in the form of a newsletter, and we would like you to subscribe to it because we think you'd find it interesting and to get you across what the best games or the most interesting games there are to watch, and you know there's enough of them to be able to get a good spread of some of the games that you might not necessarily watch, so hopefully you'll enjoy that.
If you go to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball, there'll be a link on the sofpodcast.com, so naturally, put your email address in, and there you go. Yeah. It's going to be called the Weekend Box Set.
That's right.
So, yeah,
the Weekend Box Set.
Yeah, so, that's what it's going to be called, and that pretty much sums up what it is, really.
Older listeners who remember us from the old days of Some People on the Pitch and the Football Fairground might remember the TV previews that we used to do.
Yeah.
This will be a shortened version, because there is way too much football on television for
Yeah, exactly.
For
Why preview 4 games that are on at the same time when we pick out the one that we think you should be watching?
Yeah, or at least the one that we'll be watching.
Yeah, so hopefully you find that useful, and hopefully you sign up for it. But I think that's all we've got to talk about this week. We didn't even get around to talking about Usain Bolt at Borussia Dortmund, which you'll have to look up online, I'm afraid, listeners. But anyway, if you want to come back to us about Safe Standing, then come through us through the normal channels. We'll tell you how to get in touch in the closing music. But also, you know, you've got Instagram as well now. They can get in contact with as well.
You can see pictures.
All the channels. Actual images. All the channels. So it's like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Oh.
Not on Snapchat, though.
No.
I think that's probably because we still don't know how to use it.
I think we're
graceful enough to acknowledge that there are some social media platforms that it would be creepy if we were on.
Are we on Bebo?
What about MySpace? Yeah. We should definitely do a MySpace page.
Totally. And on that technical note, I think it's time we brought this podcast to a close. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Terry DeVilla, and from Ian Bilton, it's goodbye.
Goodbye. Please, RT.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
If I just take a snap.
By all means. I can give you lights.
I want lights going up and down. Yeah, go.
Bye.
Perfect. Oh, that's good. That's A little sneak of the studio.
There.
We'll take a picture of your notes as well, as a kind of preview. We'll take a picture of the...
with the lady.
Pretty lady there.
I could. Safe standing. Oh, that's very good. Well done.
Safe standing, but she sat down, eh? Oh, yeah, I think that's great.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Excellent choice. Right, actually...